Hello, and welcome to a special edition of the Sibylline Podcast. June is Pride Month, and we will be speaking about an array of risks related to LGBTQI issues around the world. My name is Sydney, and I'm the North America Analyst, and today I'm joined by Edie Lipton, our Sub-Saharan Africa Analyst, and Aidan Mordecai, our Asia-Pacific Analyst. So, of course, in the US, there have been a lot of topics related to LGBTQ issues recently, but I would actually love to start in Sub-Saharan Africa. Edie, I understand that there's been a host of legislative developments. Can you give us a little update?
Yeah, absolutely. So over the past several months, we have seen a rise in anti-LGBTQI plus sentiments across the region. And this has effectively led to a push in several countries for stricter legislation. Mm-hmm. So specifically in Uganda last month, we saw the government pass very strict anti-LGBTQI plus legislation. So it was returned back to Parliament to tone down some of the clauses. So it removed the clause that talked about criminalising identifying as LGBTQI+, but it still imposes the death sentence for acts of aggravated homosexuality, and also imposes 20 years imprisonment for promoting LGBTQ+ sentiment. So that would kind of impact NGOs and charities, businesses there that are accused of those things.
Interesting. I'm curious, is this a new issue in Uganda, or has this been, you know, a trend for the last 5, 10, 15, 20 years?
So they've always had really strict laws in Uganda. But recently, over the past few months, there's been a kind of a push on social media accusing the West effectively of promoting these ideas. We've also seen that in Kenya and Tanzania as well, where we have these kind of thoughts floating about on social media.
Interesting. Are there any other jurisdictions or countries rather in Sub-Saharan Africa that have introduced similar legislation?
Not as strict as Uganda, but we have seen in Kenya, I think it was in March, the Supreme Court upheld a verdict by a lower court saying that the government effectively couldn't refuse to register a organisation that promoted LGBTQ plus causes. We also saw in Tanzania this same kind of sentiment about importing the LGBTQ plus sentiments were imported from the West. Mm. And that led to the government actually banning a series of books that were deemed to promote those ideas.
Extremely fascinating. Mm. I suppose, you know, another point that I'd be interested in, has the rising anti-LGBTQI plus sentiment and legislative developments therein resulted in an increase in kind of violent incidents and harassment against LGBTQI plus individuals?
Yeah, absolutely. We've seen it in Uganda. In Kenya, following that court decision that I talked about, we actually saw it face a lot of backlash from President Ruto, and that actually sparked protests, mostly among the Christian and Muslim populations across the country. So that elevates threats of kind of harassment and direct threats as well to LGBTQI plus individuals.
Okay, interesting. So we see a kind of trend where, you know, the increased social and political tensions is also going to raise those domestic unrest risks, particularly in urban centers, I imagine.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, super interesting. Mm. So Aidan, I'm really curious to hear if there have been similar legislative developments in Southeast Asia.
Maybe not, none as overt as what's happening in Sub-Saharan Africa, but there have been some changes in recent years. For example, in Indonesia, while not directly aimed at the LGBTQI plus community, their recent amendments to the criminal code, which will come in to force at 2025, among a range of different provisions, also ban sexual relations between unmarried couples. And given that, of course, same-sex marriages in Indonesia are not allowed, that would essentially indirectly criminalize every relation between LGBTQ plus individuals. So that's a concern for the community in the coming years. And elsewhere in Singapore, the Section 377A, which has been a controversial provision in the criminal code for a while, which criminalizes same-sex relations between men, was actually decriminalized last year, I believe. And obviously that was a sign of progress. It hasn't been enforced for many years, but it was still a sign of progress for the community. But on the other hand, in this essentially the same moment, the government amended the constitution to strengthen the definition of marriage as being between a man and a woman only, which dims prospects for equal rights for the community in the longer term, and have indirect consequences on provision of public housing, for example, mm-hmm. which majority of the population live in Singapore. So there's legislation changes, but there's also changing mood or a growing a mood of not dissimilar to what Edie was saying about tying LGBTQI plus activism and pushing for those rights to Western influences, and that comes past and past, and that's quite a potent narrative, obviously. And most of these countries are independent in the region, almost in living memory. So the value of independence very highly, and so questions of is there Western influence or not can really get a good reaction. Singapore, for example, reprimanded quite publicly or warned the US embassy last year or the year before when they co-hosted a webinar with local LGBTQI plus activists and warned against a very directly foreign interference, essentially, in local social mm-hmm. issues. The Pink Dot event, which is the flagship event in Pride Month for Singapore, which is already quite restricted, as most public protests are in Singapore. I think 2017, multinational corporations were banned from being able to sponsor them, mm-hmm. sponsor the event, and actually non-local Singaporean citizens were banned from actually participating and attending the event. So it becomes a even more sensitive issue then when it comes to influences or voices that are not local.
Okay, so we're seeing then kind of a growing consensus in various regions around the world that LGBTQI plus issues are somehow imported from Western countries, and I suppose therefore there might be rising reputational risks or kind of operational risks, activism risks perhaps, for Western companies that are operating in those regions.
Yeah, absolutely. For example, recently in Malaysia, we've had a couple of incidents in the last couple of months. Swatch, the Swiss watchmaker even, had their Pride collection confiscated from a number of stores in Malaysia by the Home Ministry for, and they were rainbow coloured, watches for, I forgot what vague law they violated, but for displaying LGBTQI plus sort of symbols publicly. And as well as that, we've also had Coldplay is going to tour Asia and will be visiting Malaysia and Indonesia, among other countries. And there's public calls to cancel the concerts in Malaysia and Indonesia from high-profile Islamic parties or influence groups because of previous statements from the band showing the support for the community. And I mean, it's really just a way of approving their religious credentials as a party or as an individual. And often it doesn't really, I guess, pose a direct threat. The the concert's still sold out in, you know, like mm-hmm. an hour or something like that. So it definitely doesn't represent the whole country at mm-hmm. all, but they do pander to certain communities at certain times. And it, but nevertheless, it has an impact, you know, on organizations when they go out there and say they support a particular issue. Mm-hmm. They attract this attention, which they might not want to, and they would have to be prepared to deal with that sort of attention. It's becoming a very easy target.
So where firms might, you know, enter Southeast Asia and be possibly put in the position of, you know, receiving backlash or maybe a reprimand from the local government?
Could do. I wouldn't want to homogenize. Southeast Asia is a very diverse region, of course. Religious conservativeness in Malaysia, Indonesia maybe stands out. But then there's other countries like Thailand, which is obviously more open to the community, and it's progressing that way, though. Like obviously everywhere, there's also you know, different forces within a country, right, mm-hmm. pulling different ways, and so it's a difficult balance, and there's no way to, it's difficult, wouldn't want to generalize, but yeah, the governments and authorities, you know, that are trying. Maybe lean that way, you know, conservatively, which is quite common. You would have a higher risk, I think, in those jurisdictions.
Interesting. I can add from the US perspective that while firms are not so much, you know, a lot of Western firms are based in the US, of course. American companies are based in the US. So they're not necessarily entering another country, entering an environment that where they could face some potential, you know, tension, but they're rather trying to operate and navigate in an internal environment that is demanding that these firms, you know, take a stand on an issue. And of course, LGBTQI+ rights, this is an issue that a lot of organizations have taken, have taken public positions on. But we've seen firms that are perceived to take ideologically aligned positions on any number of issues, social issues in particular, in recent years, come under like quite significant reputational and even activism risks. Edie, have companies operating in sub-Saharan Africa, you know, faced any similar kind of activism pressures?
So when Uganda passed the that strict legislation that I spoke about earlier, we saw bodies like the UN, the US, all these kind of other international organisations come out and condemn the law. And that's likely to kind of increase activists in Western countries, condemning companies who are still operating in those countries, kind of pressuring them to withdraw. We've seen a lot of international organizations. So we saw tech companies come together to create a kind of statement. They haven't announced their withdrawal, but they have said that they would like to decrease their engagement within Uganda following that legislation.
I was wondering about, I guess, more direct risks to the community itself, and how they've maybe changed or evolved in the US currently?
Certainly. So in the last few years, we've seen a rising trend of incidents of hate crime against people who identify with the LGBTQI+ community. In 2021, the FBI registered its hate crime statistics, and 1/5 of all hate crime incidents were against people based on either their sexual orientation or gender identity. Now, that makes it the second highest category of hate crime behind ethnically motivated, racially motivated hate crimes that account for about 65%. So already between, you know, racially motivated and anti-LGBTQI+ hate crimes, you're accounting for a very significant proportion of all hate crime incidents in the US. So the FBI just published its hate crime statistics just a few months ago, and they were for 2021. So there's a bit of a time lapse there, but we have seen that trend only continue. Particularly in the last year, there has been a sustained, increase in those incidents. So in addition to kind of sporadic hate crime incidents, there we've also seen coordinated anti-LGBTQI plus sentiment within far-right groups online. And also in real life, we've seen several demonstrations in places including Florida and Ohio recently, where neo-Nazi groups like the Goyim Defense League have targeted local community events where there is a drag show element. So some of these groups have actually set up camp outside of these community events and engaged in Nazi propaganda and attempting to intimidate people that are attending such events. So, you know, this is a trend that we definitely assess is going to continue, this kind of intense efforts by coordinated far-right groups to target such events. And that raises bystander risks for people who might be attending, particularly, given Pride Month, it's also possible that Pride Month activities, whether they be protests or rallies or kind of more just community events in general for the LGBTQI plus community, might be even targeted by far-right entities.
So with the rising hate crimes, is there particular targets or kind of methods that a particular risk, you think, to the community?
So in particular, we've seen radicalized individuals that have been, you know, consuming content related to far-right groups actually make threats against particular hard targets. This has included, in particular, children's hospitals in the U.S. Last autumn of 2022, Boston Children's Hospital received 3 bomb threats for, you know, alleging that they were conducting gender-affirming care against youth. And this resulted in quite a significant disruption and very serious threat to everybody in the hospital, patients and staff. We've also seen far-right groups online latch on to Texas Children's Hospital in Houston, similarly for providing gender-affirming care for young people. So hospitals, that's a risk in particular, and frankly, organizations that might be somehow closely affiliated to children's hospitals where they are performing gender-affirming care are likely to face potential reputational and activism risks. Moreover, in the last year, we've seen several incidents of shootings at LGBTQI plus nightclubs. We've seen such incidents in Florida and as well as in Colorado Springs, there was a nightclub shooting as well. So it's likely that these places where the community might gather and, you know, celebrate and party, they might also be considered hard targets. Edie, in sub-Saharan Africa and any of the places you've mentioned, like Uganda perhaps, are there kind of attack risks or, you know, what kind of physical security issues are there?
Yeah, not so much in major urban centres, but we have seen in more rural areas, communities attacking individuals who they suspect as identifying as LGBTQI+. So yeah, not so much in cities, but that's likely to pose a threat to staff, local NGO workers who are located in more rural areas of those countries.
Thank you so much for joining us for this discussion. And thank you to Edie and to Aiden. It was a really wonderful conversation. And again, join us next time, like and subscribe on our channels, and we look forward to chatting again soon.